Hey du, hier ist deine AOK Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit sind wir immer an deiner Seite. Mit unserem Bonusprogramm halten wir dich in Bewegung und belohnen dich. Mit 2 kostenfreien Gesundheitskursen pro Jahr machen wir dich happy. Mit 180 Euro Zuschuss zur Osteopathie stärken wir dich und dein Portemonnaie. Und mit diesem Radiospot wollen wir einfach nur mal Danke sagen. Dafür, dass du uns vertraust. Dein Plus sind wir. AOK Plus.
Wünschst du dir jemanden, der dich versteht wie kein anderer? Jemand, der deine Wünsche wahr werden lässt und mit dir das schönste Abenteuer deines Lebens erleben möchte? Die Commerce-Plattform Shopify revolutioniert Millionen von Unternehmen weltweit. Mit Shopify richtest du im Nu deinen Online-Shop ein. Ganz ohne Programmier- oder Designkenntnisse. Dank der effizienten Einrichtung und intuitiven Social-Media- und Online-Marketplace-Integration kannst du über Instagram, eBay und Co. werben und verkaufen. Neue Zielgruppen zu erreichen war noch nie so einfach. Shopify bietet auf einer einzigen, sicheren Plattform alle Tools, um dein Online-Business aufzubauen. Kostenlos testen und dein Business der Welt präsentieren. Shopify.de/try besuchen. Einfach Shopify.de/try eingeben und loslegen. Made for Germany. Powered by Shopify.
I want it more than anything. I don't need fame or riches, although I wouldn't say no if the world offered up either. I want my work to matter. I want people to discuss it in classrooms and book clubs and bars and wherever else people gather. On the television show Big Brother, one of my many vices I've since discarded, one contestant, Cody, he of the forgotten surname and season number, said, "I want to succeed more than I want to breathe." I may have butchered the quote. I heard it for the first time over 10 years ago and will never forget the sentiment. Cody did not end up winning Big Brother. He came in second place. I will not forget that either. I started writing when I was 18. A late start. Bradbury claims 1,000 words per day from the age of 12, but a late start is better than no start. I did not go to college, because one should not waste time or money on greater education along the road to being a writer. At 18, I didn't appreciate the value of youth, but I am in eternal gratitude to my younger self for having the good sense not to fret my life away before some grizzled professor. Chuck Palahniuk once said, "We must all give away our youth for something." I probably butchered that quote just as much as I did Cody's. But once again, the message rings true. I traded my best years away for learning to write. I do not regret it. I got a job bartending at the Irish pub, and there was nothing remarkable or noteworthy about that. The stories and lessons learned on the job, and few they were, will speak through my fiction. I would hate to ruin Mrs. Patterson's story, the time a Molotov cocktail crashes through her apartment window during a Santa Claus parade, by spoiling it with what really happened and who it really happened to. Stephen King's own writing, William Strunk Jr.'s element of style, and Ray Bradbury's zen in the art of writing came first. I learned to cut adverbs and make sentences punch like Tyson and develop one's own style. I learned from Stephen King that a great novelist should cut their teeth writing short stories, so I wrote 3 in one day. Eggs, about a young boy abused by his father after forgetting to pick up the titular food from the grocery store. Magnets and Celluloid, about a plastic surgeon who creates and is eventually murdered by his robot girlfriend. And The Loveland Frogs, based upon mythology out of Loveland, Ohio. Today, I know these 3 stories are not worth the bites they are stored upon, but they were passable first efforts. Most importantly, I learned that to be a great writer, one needs to be a great reader. And so, before my 19th birthday, I read the entire catalogues of Shirley Jackson, Lovecraft, and as much as the aforementioned writers I could. It was not enough. I broke up with Stephanie, my girlfriend of 3 years. I started listening to podcasts about motivation and determination and learned that the latter is more necessary than the former. There is much to be learned from the uber-successful if one can cast aside envy. And 2 thematic constants arose after thorough research of Jobs, Zuckerberg, Musk and Bezos. discipline, and luck. After a long shift on Saturday night, I asked one of the cooks, Alex, to tattoo the paradigms on my arms. The ink poisoned me, and I spent a week in the hospital. Upon release, I had the tattoos done by a professional and hid rat poison outside of Alex's apartment for his dog to eat. This prompted a short story, Marigold. In Marigold, Alex, renamed Roland Mears, loses his faithful bull terrier Jillian to bone cancer, and after Roland buries her in a field of flowers, she comes back to life and convinces him to start murdering cats. In real life, the dog was a husky. It ate the rat poison and died. I quit working at the Irish pub after my 20th birthday when an Indigo opened up in Lancaster Mall. By transitioning from server to cashier, my income was cut almost in half. But after accounting for the discount on books and the sheer volume of what I was able to steal, the career move was a net positive. My 20th year also marked the start of my first novel, One Last August in the West, a horror western similar in tone to King's The Gunslayer. I put down 110,000 words in 2 months, edited it down to 95,000 in a third, and submitted my manuscript to every literary agent in New York, Los Angeles, Toronto, and Chicago. It was unanimously rejected. But writers rarely end up getting their first novel published. Brandon Sanderson was working on his 13th novel when his 6th got picked up. I committed to 2,000 words per day, and as penance, I flushed my distracting cell phone down the toilet, along with 2 liters of Coca-Cola and the rest of the processed sugar in my kitchen. On December 31st, 2016, I was 25 years old with 6 unpublished novels gathering metaphorical dust in various memory sticks. Instead of literary fame and adoration, I had a mild cocaine addiction and a growing sense that nothing but a black pit of failure lay in my horizon. I missed 3 family Christmas dinners and was not even invited to the 4th. Yet, I can honestly say my passion never wavered. I just needed to put more time in, discipline and luck. When the ink fades, I will carve the words in with a knife. I was fired from Indigo when the manager, Donna, caught me sneaking out with a copy of Joe Hill's The Fireman and Jonathan Jan's Children of the Dark. I hardly cared. I had stolen at least 2x my wages worth of books from that hellhole. But the expulsion did leave me without financial stability for a short time. The first stroke of luck came 2 weeks later. My parents died. I can hear you condemning me, perhaps even suspecting me, but I had nothing to do with it. They burned up in a house fire, and as their only child, their estate went to me. The house was worth a few hundred thousand before the fire, but my father had always been a penny pincher, and while he neglected to buy house insurance, he did own his own law firm. I was still living in my 1-bedroom apartment, but better than $5 million appeared in my savings account. Thus, my job search ended, and my research began. What are the limits of human productivity? This was the question I sought to answer. Laborers, factory workers, and military types likely have some idea of the physical boundaries, but the written word is a product of finesse and creativity. My capacity for conjuring worlds and populaces within them is often derived from the volume and quality of creative material consumed. In other words, I had to inhale creativity in order to exhale it. But that led me back to my question. What is the limit? Or rather, my limit. I split my day into 4ths. 1/4 for reading, another 1/4 for writing. 1 for various day-to-day necessities like grocery shopping, laundry, and of course eating, and save the last 1/4 for sleeping. I discovered I could reduce my non-writing time by consuming mostly shakes and using Amazon to deliver anything I might need. Garbage bags, laundry detergent, protein powder, toilet paper, and other essentials. It was easy enough to arrange for my bills to be paid, electric, hydro, internet, through automatic withdrawal. After considerable research, taken out of day-to-day time and sleep, of course, I invested a large sum of my inheritance into exchange-traded funds with high dividend yields. Half of these dividends went into my expense account, and I arranged for a DRIP, dividend reinvestment plan, for the other half. I work for immortality and divine art. My money can work for me. By the end of 2017, I had upped the original 6 hours per day of dedicated writing to 8. I finished 2 more novels that year. Sting, a horror novel about a vampire who transformed between man and tarantula hawk instead of a bat. And The Bot, a futuristic sci-fi about a game show in which 9 human players suss out which among them is really a robot disguised as a human. These went entirely unappreciated by agents and publishers. In On Writing, Stephen King says he received personalized, encouraging rejections when he was a teenager. But I think he must be a damn liar. At 26, I outwork and outwrite the teenager versions of him and any other writer, but have received nothing of the sort. I just needed another stroke of luck and another boost to my productivity. I wondered if agents even bothered with personalized rejections anymore. King, after all, while talented, comes from a different lifetime, where books and those who wrote them were common. I added another half hour of writing time to each day by purchasing an expensive pair of gaming glasses, yellow lens sunglasses that reduced the stinging in my eyes after 8.5 hours of staring at screens and squinting at fine print. This translated to more restful sleep, and so I didn't need to spend as much time in bed. Next, I tried medication. I experimented with caffeine, Adderall, Ritalin, Vyvanse, Concerta, methamphetamine, and cocaine. The resulting prescription? Caffeine in the morning and Adderall in the afternoon. These were the most effective because they avoided the liability and potential of incarceration and could be delivered to my front door. I continued on this way, liberating myself of distractions and increasing productivity, and by April of 2018, I had stretched my writing time to 10 hours per day. By then, my desperation had reached a fever pitch, and in an effort to achieve greatness, I sacrificed another hour of sleep. This hour was devoted purely to querying and developing my query letters for agents and publishers. I also widened the scope of my work. I finished my first mystery, Chicago, in the fall of 2017, but it went undiscovered. I had always known the self-publishing route was one reserved for the untalented and the unremarkable, but I felt I could use the internet to drum up interest. I created my own website, carlstories.com, but traffic started low and sank to 2 or 3 page views per day, then to 2 or 3 per week. I abandoned the website. I'm no marketer. I realized I could save additional time by pouring my daily meal replacements into an IV drip and drinking through a self-sealing straw whenever my stomach grumbled. On June 14th, I received my first personalized rejection from agent Carol Alden Robbins for my Star Wars-inspired space opera, Glow Forever. Carol informed me that my work was good, but not quite what she was looking for at the moment. I emailed her back immediately, requesting that she pass my work along to a colleague of hers who might be more interested in looking for clients. After 6 months with no reply, I mailed Carol a bomb. I wasted an entire day building the damn thing by dissecting my own electronics and ordering other necessary components from darker corners of the internet. I wasted an afternoon driving up to Toronto and personally putting the thing in a mailbox. After Carol Alden Robbins exploded, she was resurrected briefly by the media, then laid to rest 3 days later when a hurricane smashed into Florida and devastated a community of morons who thought they could stand up to Mother Nature. The murder and subsequent hurricane led to a crime thriller, Utopia Devil. Not long after that, I began to consider the possibility of a 24-hour workday. I had already solved the more difficult bits. My finances, bills, and expenses were taken care of, and would be taken care of for the foreseeable future. My investments were performing even better than I'd projected, and I was saving extra money by only using electricity for my laptop and writing naked to reduce the time spent doing laundry. The first true obstacles were food and water. but I'd already mostly solved that as well. I couldn't quite go on endlessly. Not yet. But if I put larger holding containers and filled them with food that could last, say, a week or so unrefrigerated, I would only need to stop when the food basins needed a refill. Rain barrels could collect drinking water. I only needed to buy a filtration system. Sleep was the real killer here. Yes, I could use drugs. I had access to a bottomless supply of legal drugs and could pay someone to bring them to me. It would not even be difficult to rig up a zipline between my desk chair and the mail slot I'd cut into the door, with permission from the apartment people, of course. I bought a clothesline and a food court tray off of Amazon as soon as the idea occurred to me. Still though, eventually, I would have to sleep. I could stay up for days at a time with enough stimulants, but I would crash. In the past, before I created my strict schedule, I would occasionally go on 12 to 15 hour writing sprees. The results were inevitably disappointments. Cardboard characters, plots like Swiss cheese, run-on sentences, and plenty of adverbs. I debated for a long time, much longer than what I generally spend evaluating each efficiency. The simple truth was, I was scared. To commit myself utterly to the craft was a more difficult hammer to drop than poisoning a dog, starting a fire, or even crafting a pipe bomb. I was casting aside more than friends and family with this move. I would be expelling my life, any sense of self beyond what I could transcribe in a work of fiction. I reasoned that if my body began to fail, I could always pull out and resume my 10 hours of writing per day. I want to be great. While contemplating a non-stop workday, I stumbled upon another great distraction, in both a literal and figurative sense. I was being impeded by my own manhood. I dialed 911 and informed them of what was to happen. When the first red light splashed the inside of my study, I performed the procedure. The pain was exquisite and vicious. I urinate through a plastic tube now. The tube is taped up to the wall and runs into the kitchen sink. Mentally, I'm no longer encumbered by perverse urges. Physically, I save 15 minutes a day. I took the plunge into permanent work. Water so deep and cold and lonely and dark from the surface. But once inside, oh how good it felt to swim. I'm writing forever. The drugs and network of electrical engineering handiwork provide stimulation to my nervous system to keep me awake. I am eternity. I've never felt more alive. I am fed and watered and stimulated. But there is one new, small problem. I hear rats in the walls. If they fit to provoke me, I will simply have cats delivered to the premises and arrange for pet sitters to visit. They will grow old and their grandchildren will fall over themselves to hear one more time about how grandpa or grandma had the privilege of servicing the greatest writers of all time. He through which the muse flowed and flowed and flowed and never stopped. And if the beasts can get to my toes before the hungry felines arrive, what do I care? What need have I for toes and legs? With less flesh in my body, my nutritional requirements will be slashed by a third or more. I have an idea. I have nothing but ideas.